All right, so one of the ways that we are going to be helping you pass the time here is by asking you to find creative ways to stay busy and send us your feats of athletic excellence or luck, things you're doing in the safety of your own home while socially distancing, but that could be competitive or fun. And we would ask you to tweet them at us using the hashtag RiseAndShine. And here's our first one. How about staircase trick shots? This is Patrick Nix of River Forest, Illinois. He's bouncing the ball down the stairs and right into the cup. That is what we call the hole-in-one. That is well done. Patrick Nix, River Forest, Illinois. Again, tweet these at us using the hashtag RiseAndShine, and we will put them on TV so everyone can enjoy and marvel at your feats of excellence as we all continue to get through this thing together. That's what this is about. We will, if you're a sports fan, we're going to do our best to be here for you with the sports news and information and analysis and opinions and hopefully a lot of fun, and that's where you come in as we get through this unprecedented set of circumstances together. And we have a busy hour coming your way as we get up here on ESPN, and it starts with the Patriots. Post TB12, they make a move at quarterback. Are they ready with what they have? That answer may surprise you, and it will bring us to our new feature. I will make a prediction about this year's Pats that they won't like, mostly because I think it's true. And then, it's no longer when, it is if the NBA comes back at all this year. With the clock ticking, we've got Wendy and Jalen ready to go in this hour as we get up with you on ESPN. Tom Brady, of course, has been the center of practically all the conversation over the past week or so. He was selected in the sixth round, 199th overall in 2000 by the Patriots, of course. The Michigan man went 134 picks after Giovanni Carmazzi, who was a quarterback who never played an NFL game. Then TB12 has gone on to experience just everything. What else can you say? Won 6 Super Bowls, most by any player in NFL history. Took the Patriots to 9. You know all of that. And while he may now be a Buccaneer, he will always be synonymous with the Patriots. His 20 years in New England gave him 74,000 passing yards, 541 passing touchdowns. Both of those are NFL records for most with a single franchise. And I won't read all of this to you, but Robert Kraft and the Kraft family and the Patriots took out an ad in the Tampa Times thanking Tom Brady, and one note in there, it's beautifully written actually, in which he says basically to the Buccaneers and the Tampa community, take care of him, you got a great one. So the feelings between the ownership of the Patriots and Tom Brady remain very close. As to the rest of it, on Monday night, March 16th, Brady called Kraft and made the short drive to his house for a conversation he had long imagined. All of this is from a piece over the weekend by our Seth Wickersham. And in this piece, he says that Kraft, in a long round of phone calls to Patriots beat writers the next day, would say he assumed Brady was visiting to finalize a new contract. That wasn't what happened. Brady told Kraft it was over, and the owner would leave little doubt as to why, saying, quote, to the NFL Network, think about loving your wife, and for whatever reason, there's something, her father or mother, that makes life impossible for you, and you have to move on. Again, all of that is from an extremely detailed and extraordinary piece by our Seth Wickersham, who has been all over this story and this franchise now for several years. And again, this weekend, there was a lot in there. So, Seth, thank you for taking this time today. And I just want to go to that quote again. Think about loving your wife, and for whatever reason, there's something, her father or her mother, that makes life impossible for you, and you have to move on. He's not making any bones about what happened here, right? We should all assume he is talking about Bill Belichick.
Yeah, it's one of those moments where you accidentally tell the truth. And I think that when you look at the reasons why Tom Brady is a Tampa Bay Buccaneer, I think you can really trace it back to the fall of 2017. Look, there was a host of issues that were going on in the building, but one of the biggest ones was that Tom Brady wanted a contract extension. He made it very clear publicly and privately about his desire to play until his mid-40s, and he wanted a contract, a commitment from 18. It didn't have to be the Patriots, but he preferred it to be the Patriots. And at the end of the day, that contract never came. It didn't come in August of 2018. It didn't come in August of 2019. And I think that's the reason why, in the end of the day, he moved on. He wanted to play, and he wanted a team that wasn't necessarily going to pay him the most, but was going to give him that commitment. And that wasn't going to be the New England Patriots, who preferred more of a year-to-year thing.
Let's make sure we're totally clear on what we're talking about, though, because frequently when we talk about contracts, the owner gets involved in that. But Are we to assume that Kraft would have been all on board with that had Belichick been, and that the reason this turned into a problem is that it is Belichick who did not want to give Brady that commitment?
Yeah, it was Belichick who was driving it, and he's been driving it the past couple of years. And I think that, you know, again, we're dealing with a lot of extremes here. This isn't a usual situation. You're dealing with a quarterback who's very extreme in that he wants to play until he's 45 years old. His dad once told me that Tom was going to be a modern day George Blanda. Then you have Bill Belichick, who's part of his genius is knowing exactly when to move on from players. And I think that they probably went further than they would have with Tom than already. But at the end of the day, again, you know, they didn't see him playing quarterback for the New England Patriots at age 45. And Tom Brady was resolute. He wanted to play until his mid-40s. And more than money, he wanted a team that was going to give him a contract with no qualifiers.
So I want to get to the relationship then, because these are generally football things. We've heard people speculate about the notion that Belichick's style, not giving quote-unquote love to his players, the way he coaches hard and didn't show the kind of appreciation for a star like Brady that you might imagine practically any other coach would. What can you tell us about the relationship beyond the contract decisions?
Well, at the moment, it's not great, and in a lot of ways, it hasn't been great for a while. I think that, you know, look, Belichick is an incredibly demanding coach, and he will not give an inch. I mean, nobody has ever been better in the history of the game at separating the personal from the private. I mean, you saw how he feels about Tom Brady in the release statement, in the statement that he released after Tom announced that he wouldn't be a Patriot anymore. But when you're in that building and you were playing for him, he will not let up. And yes, I think that it wore on Tom Brady, but I think that he knew what he was getting into. And I still think there was a chance that he would have been a New England Patriot if they had just said, look, we want you here. We want you here for 2 years. But both men stood their ground. Tom was resolute about playing into his mid-40s, and Belichick was resolute that this was a year-to-year situation. And that's the way it went. I mean, there's, you know, as much as the personal relationship might have been icy and is icy right now, I think that Tom would have dealt with it if he felt like that they were willing to give him that commitment and he felt good about returning.
And the relationship that we know is not icy is that between Robert Kraft and the Kraft family and Brady himself. We just showed the ad in the Tampa Times. Kraft has numerous times said that he considers Brady to be practically like a son. So with this now having been done, where does this leave Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft going forward?
Well, they're married together. You know, Kraft's clearly, you know, he said all along that he was going to side with Bill Belichick and let him drive this negotiation. That's one of the reasons why I found that quote that he said so interesting, where he said that he assumed that Tom Brady was coming over to his house to quietly get a deal done the way they had in the past, because, you know, the Patriots had made it known that it was Belichick who was driving this. But, you know, at this point, this is the New England Patriots are Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick's team. And if the dynasty continues, it's going to be on their shoulders, clearly moving forward.
All right, Seth Wickersham again. We called it recommended reading earlier this morning. It's an exceptional piece with an extraordinary detail that is up on ESPN.com for you right now. Seth, thank you very much for spending some time with us here this morning. I have Swagoo and Dominique with me all morning long. Guys, you were listening to that conversation. Neek, I'll start with you. What'd you take away?
Oh, no, I think it took away all the things when I read it, and it reminded me, Seth didn't bring it up now, but it reminded me of something that he wrote about. Do you remember when Tom Brady did that interview with Jim Gray, and he asked, how did he feel appreciated by his boss? And Tom Brady said, I plead the fifth. That was in one of the opening paragraphs of Seth's piece, and it reminded me that this has been going on for quite some time, and no matter how much you win or how fun it is to win, there's a personal part of this that has been kind of bungled, I guess. It's hard to say that anything was bungled there, considering they won 6 championships and went to the Super Bowl 8 times, but the way that it ended is not pretty, and I think it's because you get the good with the bad with Bill Belichick. His kind of maniacal focus on winning and treating everybody equally has provided these good results, but it also ends up having a bad relationship. In the end, when you have somebody like that, the end is never going to be pretty, and this certainly wasn't.
Swagoo?
I think it's fascinating what Seth said, and I think it's something that we've known that I actually mentioned when we were first talking about this story is that when you see so much success from the exterior, you think everything is a fine, all well-tuned machine. And it's not. There are egos, there are personalities, there are a lot of things that play into success or failure. And the fact that this relationship was like this between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, and they were still able to overcome, I think it says a lot about both men. I think it says a lot about the guys that were around to keep that temperature to where it was. But now that it's over, and we learn this in history, it tells us that usually when you detach is when things start coming out. We saw signs. We heard Tom Brady. In this article, he talks about the last interview that Tom did after the loss against the Titans, how he was leaving the building and what he was dressed like. He wasn't pristine. Picked up his bag and walked out of the stadium. Giselle talked about Tom not being appreciated in New England like he should be. We heard all of this and we saw all of this. But what happened was they went out and won games and won Super Bowls. So we were like, okay, we know that is happening, but they're doing this, so it can't be that bad. But at the foundation of it, it was not a good relationship between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, and Tom Brady kind of ran his course with being in that environment where it's so tough to play, and we've heard players say that.
You're right that things start to come out when the separation happens. And I don't think this is the end of it. I think that Tom Brady and Robert Kraft are very aware of the way that they're behaving and the things that they're putting out there because they want the story to be heard and understood a certain way. I don't think Bill Belichick is going to sit idly by. At some point, I think that the word is going to come out. Bill Belichick's side is going to come out some way. And this is not going to stop. It's going to keep going on, I think, until Tom Brady retires and then they all come back together and celebrate as if none of this ever happened.
You know, they were very different circumstances, but I was there covering it when the Chicago Bulls dynasty broke up, and the triangle of relationships, if you will, was completely different, and who was on whose side was completely different. But these things tend to happen with sports dynasties. This one lasted longer than practically any in history. We have more on it as we go, and much more to come as we get up with you. He's a guy who can change a defense and is still unsigned. Where might Jadeveon Clowney wind up? Our insider will run the hurry up with that and more next. And then Jameis Winston also looking for a new team. Why learning from a legend might be his next best move. All that and more as we get up with you on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back. A 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Back on Get Up, and let's run the hurry up with our NFL insider, Dan Graziano. Good morning, Dan. What is the market for Jadeveon Clowney?
Well, it's not as expensive a market as he hoped it would be, Greeny. There are teams interested in Jadeveon Clowney, but he went into this process looking for high-end pass rusher money, meaning $20 million or more per year. He hasn't found it. We've heard the Jets connected as a possible landing spot. We know Seattle is still interested, but his price has to come down before anybody makes a move, and so far it hasn't.
I got another quarterback to ask you about. Is Jacoby Brissett going to get traded?
Not necessarily. Look, as of Friday, the Colts had to pay him a $7 million roster bonus, which means all that's left on that contract is a $6 million salary and about up to $2 million in per-game roster bonuses. So he's a pretty good bargain if the Colts want to keep him as Philip Rivers' backup for 1 year. He's also a nice bargain if someone wants to trade for him. As I understand it, the Colts right now plan to have him on the team, but they're open to listening.
How about Andy Dalton?
Andy Dalton, I don't think, gets traded because of that $17.5 million salary. It's not guaranteed, so the Bengals could cut him and not have to pay him anything. I think he ends up getting released. There are teams that would take a shot on him. Jay Gruden, his former coach, the offensive coordinator in Jacksonville, certainly some place you could look to put Andy Dalton. But I don't think any team's going to give up picks and take on $17.5 million. I think eventually he gets cut.
And that brings us to another quarterback, and that is Jameis Winston. After a wild first week of free agency, Winston is now the top remaining quarterback on the free agent market, with Tom Brady having signed with Tampa, which now clearly becomes Jameis's former team. In fact, Winston said goodbye to Tampa in a tweet over the weekend. It's been a great five seasons as a Buccaneer. He tweeted, all love and respect. I love Tampa. Look forward to seeing y'all again in February. Remember, the Super Bowl will be played there in Tampa this coming year. And so, Graziano, I will come to you here. What are we expecting here to happen with Jameis Winston?
I think Jameis Winston Greene is in a point where he's got to reset expectations. You go back a couple of months, he was probably thinking about either getting franchised by the Buccaneers or getting a starting quarterback contract somewhere else. He knows he's not going to get that. We know that the musical chairs have kind of run out in terms of the quarterbacks versus the available starting spots. And at this point, the most likely scenario for Jameis Winston is he goes somewhere to either compete for a starting job or serve as a backup to a veteran who might be toward the end of his career. A lot of people keep saying Pittsburgh. It makes a lot of sense to a lot of people around there. But there are other situations where Jameis Winston could go build his career back up in a backup or reserve role and be ready to go when the starter gets hurt or when the starter decides to move on somewhere else.
What do we know relative to his mindset as far as that's concerned?
Well, you saw the message over the weekend, a goodbye to Tampa. So obviously I think that's a big step, right? I mean, he's getting to the point where, you know, he knows the team that drafted him and developed him is moving on for other options. And that's obviously a first step he has to cross. And I think at this point, like I said, he's in that mode of resetting expectations. His job for 2020 is not going to be what he expected it to be in all likelihood. So at this point, he has to see what's the best situation for me. Where can I get the most out of it? Where can I get the best chance to resurrect my career? And he's still a young player. He's obviously shown an incredible ability to do some high-end things at quarterback, so he has a lot to offer a team. He's just got to figure out what the best route is back to that starting job in the NFL.
Yeah, I phrased the question poorly. What I really mean is, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, does he want to choose a team where he has the best chance to win the starting job, or does he want to pick the best guy to sit behind and learn to try and resurrect his career somewhere down the road? It'll be telling what he winds up deciding to do. And, Dan, of course, you'll be all over that for us as we continue. Thank you there. Meanwhile, let's get to another quarterback situation, and that is Ben Roethlisberger, who we know got hurt week two last year. He says he has, quote, no doubts he will play well upon his return, saying, I'm pushing myself to come back better than ever. I have complete confidence in that. I'm throwing without pain for the first time in years. He also posted this message on social media yesterday, which was a good message about asking fans to stay indoors. And all anyone noticed was how incredibly long and full his beard is now. But his team is an interesting one to watch. Vegas is not buying it. Caesars has Baltimore an odds-on favorite to win that division, and Pittsburgh just slightly ahead of Cleveland. The Steelers have not missed the playoffs in three consecutive years, since going back to 1998 through 2000. So I got my guys with me here all morning long. I got Swagoo and Dominique. And Swagoo, I'll say it again, almost any other team that had the season the Steelers did last year and was getting back a quarterback the caliber of Ben Roethlisberger, we probably would be projecting big things for them. Are you projecting big things for the Steelers this year?
They'll compete. It'll be them and the Ravens at the end to figure out who's going to win the division. I firmly believe that. But Baltimore should be ahead right now. We watched Lamar Jackson and what he was able to do. We saw what this offense was and this defense. And you think another year with Lamar Jackson, knowing what his woes has been in the playoffs, that he'll make it a point to make sure that he's getting better and pushing himself to that point. But Pittsburgh is going to compete, G. This is Mike Tomlin. This is Ben. This is what we've seen. We've grown accustomed to this team winning in certain ways, unconventionally, like last year, dealing with quarterback rotation and hurt backs out of the backfield and still being there in the end for playoff contention. A lot of it has to do with obviously Cincinnati and the way Cleveland played as well. But with that being said, man, I don't count Pittsburgh out because of their head coach and because of Ben and what they've been able to do year in and year out with us watching them. So it's not shocking to me that they are picked that high up in the division, but I also agree that Baltimore is still the best team in that division going into the season.
Yeah, and Baltimore added Calais Campbell for almost nothing, which I think is going to be a huge asset for that defense. But I wouldn't be so high on the Steelers if they had a bad season last year, because I think relying solely on Ben Roethlisberger, as they had in the past, as he ages and his style of play where he holds the ball, takes hits, I didn't think that was going to age well, especially coming off of an elbow injury. But now that their defense has kind of stepped up and is playing the way that it's playing, it makes me have a little bit more confidence, because I think Ben can be great in spurts. I don't think he can be as great as he was at his peak, where he was kind of carrying that offense around with a great offensive line, granted, and some great playmakers, but he was the focal point of that offense. I don't think that team can succeed, but a team with a defense that's playing as well as it is, creating turnovers, causing sack fumbles, scoring points, and getting a short field for Ben Roethlisberger and ask him to make a couple big throws every now and then and maybe take fewer hits, I think that team can compete. So it's really relying on the defense. I don't think Ben can go back to peak Ben, but I think Ben can be his best self in certain situations.
Here's the deal, Swagoo. They went 8-8 last year. I don't know, with their second and frequently third string quarterback playing for them, I don't know exactly what a franchise quarterback is worth in the NFL, but it's got to be more than two games in a season. So does that, if Ben is any semblance of Ben, that should put them at 10, 11 wins this year.
Gee, real quick, I know Foxy talked about he expects Cleveland to be better, but I'm taking Ben after I take Lamar Jackson over Baker Mayfield and whoever Cincinnati gets, whether that's Joe Burrow or Tua. And I'll look at it that way. Regardless of where Ben is right now, I still would take him as the second best quarterback in that division to Lamar.
Me too, but is his team better? Dominique, is his team better than the team around Baker Mayfield in Cleveland? Quick.
No, but he's a better coach, so I think that matters.
Okay, there you have it. And that was quick. Well done. All right, we have much more to do as we continue on Get Up This Morning, much more football, and then we'll turn our attention to other things as well, because when sports return, we can expect leagues to be very careful. How will the NBA look different when and if it plays again this year? Jalen jumps in on that next. Get Up on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry-leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
We are back on Get Up, and of course, it's hard to believe it's still only been less than 2 weeks since the sports world came to a grinding halt. And while the world grapples with what comes next, commissioners like Adam Silver and Gary Bettman are trying to figure out their immediate future for their leagues. Listen to them both.
I'm optimistic by nature, and I want to believe that we're going to be able to salvage at least some portion of this season. I'd say, you know, we've done new and creative things in the past. We experimented with this year's All-Star game with a unique ending. You know, we've talked about play-in tournaments for the, you know, going into the playoffs. You know, there may be other things we can do with the format. I know I've heard from a lot of our players. We're going to try by every means we can to play basketball again. But, you know, I say that the safety and health of our players is first and our fans, which is why I don't want to speculate more than that.
Well, I believe that under the current circumstances, we can go later than we've ever gone. How late is a good question. The two factors are timing relative to how late we can go without impacting next season, and making sure that whatever we do competitively, if we're going to complete this current season, it has to have integrity. It has to be respectful of the well over 100-year history of the Stanley Cup. And that's something we're very focused on.
So that last part there, where you heard Gary Bettman, the commissioner of the NHL, with us, I interviewed him on Thursday here, was the part that got me thinking. So I wanted to bring in Brian Windhorst, our NBA insider, who is, you see there, and Jalen's going to join us live in a second as well. And so, Windy, I'm going to start with you, because he mentioned the idea of whatever they do in hockey, it has to have some integrity if there's going to be a champion, and I get that. And you also heard Adam Silver saying and that interview he did with Rachel last week, look, there may be a civic responsibility here to come back and do whatever we can do in order to provide some respite and some entertainment for fans. So with that as the backdrop, what are you hearing about where the NBA is thinking it may be able to go from here?
Right. Well, the big thing that the NBA is going to have to do in any sports league is they're going to have to create a bubble that they can get healthy players, referees and officials and television personnel into. And that is, again, you keep hearing me say this, Greeny, I'm going to keep saying it. That is what China is doing. They are taking some smaller cities in China. They're big cities compared to our cities, but some smaller cities in China where they didn't have an outbreak. They're putting all the players, well, they had outbreak, but not as severe. They're putting all the players through quarantining tests, and they're trying to get them into that bubble so that once that bubble can be established, they can play games within it. And that's what the idea of playing a charity game would be. It would be practice in creating the bubble. And look, nobody knows how this is going to go. We have a lot of things we have to go through, but it's even possible that this bubble could be created in a non-NBA city. If we get to May and we find places in this country that have less of an outbreak than others, where it may be safer to get a gathering together, maybe it's in Nashville, Tennessee, maybe it's in Billings, Montana, maybe it's a non-NBA city, but the ability to create that bubble to play within is what the NBA is going to try to figure out, and they're going to spend a lot of time watching and trying to figure out how to do that.
I have Jalen Rose with us here, and we will only be able to hear Jalen. We're having some trouble technologically getting his shot up there. I think a lot of us could do to see your face, and it would make us feel good, Jay, so I'm sorry we can't do that. But what are you hearing right now from players relative to the idea of when they might come back, how comfortable they feel about all the options on the table and things like that?
Well, 50% of the beauty of having me on is to actually be able to see how fresh my cut is and how fly my suit is. That's some relief that the world could appreciate right now, Greeny. But in all honesty, we've seen the NBA have to adjust. In 1998 and 99, there was a 50-game season during the lockout. The Spurs went on to win the championship. It's not a true asterisk after that happening. We've seen changes happen in the league. We've seen the hand check rule go away. We've seen the ball change. We've seen the three-point line change. And so I think this league is going to be very versatile and at the forefront of trying to do whatever it can to give basketball to the fans. And also, there's not much really to decide left in the NBA regular season except for the eighth spot in the Western Conference. So best case scenario, if you could get five games to see if Memphis can hold down the spot over the Pelicans in Portland, where they now have a 3.5-game lead, that's really all that's left to decide in the regular season. Otherwise, you play a couple of exhibition games and you get right to the playoffs.
That was going to be my question. I asked Mark Teixeira this relative to baseball. I'll ask it to you. How long do you believe players would need to be back together and playing in order to get ready for what might constitute an actual playoffs, an actual postseason to decide a legitimate champion?
2 weeks. Training camp normally is a week, and it used to be where teams and players could practice twice a day. I think a 14-day period is plenty of time for players to get back up into some type of shape where they can go out and be effective and not get themselves injured, and also provide some elite basketball. And I hear this tone about when should the NBA or when shouldn't the NBA start? Let me just put something out here. The NBA could start mid-June, mid-July. The NBA could start in August. This idea that you can't play basketball in September because you don't want to compete with the NFL is absurd. Of course, the Shield is and it will remain something that is hallowed in American grounds. And don't get me wrong, I can't wait for the NFL season. But it's still the beginning of the year. If you got NBA playoffs happening in September, I think the enthusiasm for LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard will be just as excitable as Tom Brady playing with the Bucks.
Could be. Now, Wendy, let me come back to you on that thought, because there are any number of different considerations here, which would include, if you were to play a season that went that long, when would you start the next one? For context, I will mention that the English Premier League, the soccer league, has announced they will finish this season in its entirety, no matter what happens, even if it means delaying the next season. That's something that obviously the leagues here may have to start giving some consideration to, because we have an offseason. You have free agency or whatever that's going to look like. You have a draft and whatever that's going to look like. So could they do that? And if so, would they be willing to push back the start of what would be then the next season?
Well, the two giant things with the EPL, number one, they don't have a playoffs.
Right.
Their season is determined. Their champion is determined within the season. The second thing is they'd have to give their TV money back if they don't play the games, whereas the NBA's is guaranteed. But there's a huge difference between what Gary Bettman said and what Adam Silver said. I agree with Jalen. I don't think they're worried about what would happen with the NBA calendar. I don't think they're worried about preserving the tradition of every champion before. I think they'll do whatever it takes, whatever it is on the calendar. And I don't think I would rule out September basketball at all.
And finally, Jalen, I would ask you this, and I wish we could see your face when you answer it, because I think it's an important question. Now, you're a former player, and I know how seriously you take the responsibility as a celebrity and as being someone who provides something of value to people. Do you believe the league has a civic responsibility and the players have a responsibility, if and when they can safely, to come back in whatever form they can to provide some sort of entertainment for people who are going through extraordinary circumstances right now?
I absolutely do, and that's the beauty of entertainment, and that's what comes with celebrity. We live in a country where we value that more so than people who have important jobs, in my opinion. For example, teachers. Look no further than how we pay for entertainment versus what teachers make to do their jobs of basically raising our kids 8 hours a day. And absolutely, the NFL, again, has been a marketing bonanza for the way that they've bottled those now 17 games and turned it into a great product for the masses. But there's nothing like the popularity of NBA players. Look no further than commercials, the Forbes list, social media. The popularity of the NBA player is so outstanding. To have them performing at an elite level to bring joy to fans, plus doing what they love, is a win-win for everybody involved.
I agree. Again, no one should under any circumstances be expected to do anything that would jeopardize their own safety or health or anyone else's. But if there is any possibility of bringing this back in a way that is safe for everyone involved, I'd be hard-pressed to see anyone deciding that they didn't think they should do it. Jalen, Wendy, both, thank you very much. And we'll continue as we go here. We'll hear much more from you guys as we go. And I want to mention that tonight we have a special encore presentation of Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury 2. Relive the epic heavyweight rematch between the Bronze Bomber and the Gypsy King. It's 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific tonight on ESPN and the ESPN app. Wilder Fury 1 will start off the festivities tonight at 7. So there will be good sports action to watch this evening on ESPN. Coming up, I know things about Brady and Belichick. One of them is going to make it back to the Super Bowl. The other one isn't. What does Stephen A. think? We'll find out next. Get up on ESPN.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
We're back on Get Up, and NBA players are finding interesting ways to pass the time during the pandemic. That is Dwayne Wade using his kid as the pole to hold up the hoop for some indoor sock basketball. And I, for one, am entertained. I don't know how you feel about it, but I'm enjoying watching it myself. We miss Dwayne Wade, and it is good to see him playing any kind of basketball any way that he possibly can. Speaking of basketball, under normal circumstances, today, we would have been sitting here talking about the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament and looking back on the round of 32. And so, we thought we would bring you the top 10 plays that we've ever seen in the NCAA round of 32. And here we go. Jalen is with me at number 10, Kansas and UTEP in 1992. And how about Kansas going down, Jalen, against Don Haskins?
I was in college in 1992, and what a lot of people don't realize, so was Shaquille O'Neal and a lot of other great players that were not able to make it to the Final Four.
Number 9 here, it's UCLA and Missouri, and this is the legendary Tyus Edney bucket to win it.
You gotta jump, big fella! You gotta jump, big fella! It's right in your face! Block that! Great move by Tyus Edney, coast to coast for the win.
That kept them alive in the second round. They wound up winning the championship. Number 8, it's Texas A&M and DePaul. This is in the women's tournament here again, the round of 32. And look at the freshman, Chenity Carter, with a 3 to win it from there.
That was great poise, under pressure, between the legs, knocks down the game winner, and sends DePaul home to Chicago in shock.
Carter would score 37 in the game. Number seven here, it's Duke and UCF. This is last year, Jalen. Zion's Duke team, he finds a way. And remember the opportunities UCF had on the other end at the buzzer.
I love what Zion brought to the NBA and what he and RJ Barrett brought to the Blue Devils. But, Greeny, I sat on this program and told you that that Blue Devils team would not cut down the net.
And, of course, they wouldn't. They barely got through that one and then lost in their next game. Number six, here she is, the legendary Brittany Griner, blocking 14 Georgetown shots in 2010.
So very dominant, not only because she scored a basketball and grabbed boards, but a defensive force, whether jumping to block shots or standing still.
Number five, Arizona Gonzaga in 2003. With a ton of stars that we saw in the NBA, Channing Frye, Andre Iguodala, Luke Walton, and others, this one went to double overtime before Arizona would win.
Yeah, there was a stacked Arizona team. I love that squad they had with Miles Simon and Bibby that ultimately won the championship. Great to see Luke Walton celebrating right there, the head coach of the Sacramento Kings.
Number four, how about Dunk City, Florida Gulf Coast, the only 15 seed to get past this round ever.
I love that squad. They gave up good shots to get great shots. They played high-flying basketball, threw a lot of lobs, and I can appreciate that.
They beat San Diego State in this one. Number three, we're only going back 2 years. It's number, the 11th seed was Loyola of Chicago, and this was one of the miracle wins. This one over Tennessee on the bucket at the buzzer that sent Sister Jean onto the Sweet 16, Jalen.
This was days after we started this program when it was 3 hours in the morning and I was talking about every sport in every segment. And my grandmother got a chance to defeat Sister Jean and she's now 102 years old and healthy.
I remember it well. Number two, I have two words for you. Stephen Curry at Davidson.
And skills translate. I talked about that with Trae Young. If you're amongst the league leaders in three-point shooting in college and assists, that translates to the NBA. Steph Curry, a three-time champion, putting in work. But the Golden State Warriors put Davidson on the map basketball
line. He had 30 in that game to beat Georgetown. And then number one, Texas A&M and Northern Iowa playing a legendary game that went double overtime and the Aggies would eventually win with Alex Caruso on the floor, Jalen.
Alex Caruso has now become a cult legend with the Los Angeles Lakers, putting in work in college for Texas A&M. Don't you miss March Madness, Greeny, filling out the brackets, having people come on the show, giving us hypnosis to try to let us know who was going to be in the Final Four? Oh, man, I miss
We all miss it. That's
so
why we'll bring you as much of it as we can in that little taste of the top 10. Jalen, we love you. We'll see you tomorrow. Meanwhile, since Tom Brady had his day yesterday, it's only fair for Peyton to get his tomorrow. We will start at 7 Eastern on ESPN2 with five of the best episodes of Peyton's Places. Then it's SEC Story, The Book of Manning, followed by the 2015 AFC Championship game between the Broncos and Patriots. And finally, Super Bowl 49 Colts-Bears wraps up the night, our Peyton Manning Marathon, tomorrow on ESPN2. Meanwhile, coming up here on ESPN, it's time for First Take in just a few minutes. Brady versus Bill. Who's to blame? Stephen A. and Max will discuss in just a few moments at First Take, 12 minutes from now on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. We debuted a new feature today, and I want to make sure everyone understands what it is. It is designed, it's called plausible deniability. It is designed for someone to make a bold prediction, an understandably hot takey kind of prediction that you kind of believe, but you are not going to be held to down the road. I started it, and with my plausible deniability today, I make the following prediction. I think Tom Brady is going to get back to the Super Bowl, and I don't think Bill Belichick is. Now, I grant that that is bordering on a preposterous opinion to have, considering Tom Brady probably has at a max 2 or 3 more years to play, and Bill Belichick has a practically unlimited time left to coach, but I kind of believe it. And so with plausible deniability, I stated here today, I refuse to be held to it. With that thought in mind, here is the one, the only, Stephen A. Smith, as we're just minutes away from First Take.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
Oh, I don't like that, Greeny. May I take a shot at modifying this segment just a little bit?
Please do.
You should not be able to couch it by saying I can lean on plausible deniability later. What you want to do is come out and be bold, and then when you're wrong, just sit up there and go like this. I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't say that. That's what you do. I mean, Max does it all the time. Max Kellerman needs to host that segment. He does it all the time, Greeny. All the time.
Okay, it's an excellent point and well taken, and I will take it under advisement with staff. Now, having said that, what do you think of the prediction?
Yeah. You know what? I don't think it's that bold. I mean, when you consider the offense that Tampa Bay has available to it, Mike Evans, O.J. Howard, Brate, Godwin, when you've got the kind of weapons that they have and you're eliminating 30 turnovers by your quarterback, 30 interceptions by your quarterback. By the way, as Dominique Foxworth pointed out earlier in the show, there were 9 other interceptions that could have easily been had against Jameis Winston. I mean, if they weren't dropped, the man could have thrown nearly 40 interceptions in one season. So when you take that into consideration and you're thinking about or the likelihood that that will be eliminated, because we're talking about somebody in Tom Brady that hasn't even thrown more than 14 interceptions in a season in years, then obviously that gives the defense some time to rest. That gives the defense some time to get their legs out from under them, game plan, etc. Not to mention the fact that they were already 8. In defensive efficiency. So when you look at it from that perspective, I would say, you know what? It's not that far-fetched to think that Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers could potentially make a Super Bowl run in the NFC.
And then how about on the other side? You've got Belichick's team right now. His quarterback room has Hoyer, Kessler, and Stidham in it. We don't know for sure those will be the quarterbacks when we get to the season. But what do you expect from them, at least in the short term?
Well, I mean, listen, Bill Belichick is a genius. We all know that. If this man found a way to get to the Super Bowl with those dudes, I think that would hurt Tom Brady's legacy. I think that's the only thing that could hurt Tom Brady's legacy. Even though you've got 6 Super Bowl rings, even though you've got 9 trips to the Super Bowl, 17 AFC division crowns. In the end, with that crop of quarterback that Bill Belichick has to work with, if somehow, some way, with Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson in the AFC, with Big Ben Roethlisberger coming back, if that man manages to take that team to the Super Bowl with those quarterbacks instead of Tom Brady, we're looking at that picture entirely differently. But we all know there's no way in hell that's going to happen. Not with those quarterbacks. No way.
I agree completely. All right, Stephen A., thank you. Awesome to see you, and I will see you in just a couple of minutes. I'll be with you for the start of First Take, which is just a few minutes away here on ESPN. So make sure that you're with us for that. Meanwhile, Damian Woody, I hope he heard the idea here. I hope he heard the concept of the segment, because he tweeted at me, hey, at ESPN Greeny, we need to talk about your Brady Belichick prediction, bro. And at least he added the show, so that's kind of nice. I'll finish it up this morning with Swagoo and Dominique. People are having at me here, big fella. Marcus, are you willing to defend me with my hot take this morning?
Hell no, I'm not willing to defend you. I already laid it out to you why that plausible deniability. I'm with Stephen A. on that. You should have just went to the next level, GM, when everybody start calling you on and be like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. I do 1,000 shows a year. I don't remember saying anything like that. And if I was, it was due to some unforeseen circumstances. But I believe Belichick gets to the Super Bowl before Brady does.
So, Nick, if I were to limit this to next season, and I told you one but not both of them are going to make it next year, wouldn't you agree with me Brady is likelier to make it next year than Belichick?
Absolutely. I like the way you're refining this take. I think next year Brady is in a good situation. That division is going to be tough, so he may not get that first-round bye since we've reduced it to just one first-round bye. But I think Brady stands a better chance right now. If you bring Cam Newton into New England, I'm not sure. Maybe I feel a little bit different, but I do think the AFC, the top of the AFC, is very tough. But the entire NFC, there are a lot of contending teams, and there are a ton of MVP caliber quarterbacks on the NFC side. So it's going to be tough over there for Brady, but I like that. That's a good kind of reformation of your take that is not nearly as embarrassing. And my argument for Belichick is we've seen Belichick win without Tom Brady. We've never seen Tom Brady win without Belichick. We can all go back to the Castle year where they went 11-5. We can go back to him winning with Brissett, winning with Garoppolo. These are all things that we've seen happen before in the past. And he took the Browns to the playoffs. The man took the Browns to the playoffs.
Go ahead, Marcus.
Nick, one more thing. One more thing, Foxy. Are we forgetting that Drew Brees is in the same conference? Did anybody mention that Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints are in the same? As much as we went crazy about,
MVP?
He needs to stay away from Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. Well, he only went to one of the other guys that's in the top five conversation of all time. So it'll be tough for Tom Brady to get to the Super Bowl.
I do feel a need to point out for clarification's sake that when they went 11-5 with Matt Cassel, that was a five-game drop-off from their previous season. Tom Brady had gone 16-0 the year before in the regular
season.
That's
unfair.
So it was
Randy
still
Moss?
A drop-off of five
team,
games.
G.
Okay,
ever
hold on.
Heard of Randy Moss?
Let's finish it with a laugh, okay? We are using the hashtag Rise and Shine, and we're asking people to send us their videos of what they're doing to keep themselves occupied during this time. And you know who responded to us? Derek Anderson, the NBA's Derek Anderson, and that's his two-year-old son getting buckets, Swagoo. Your thoughts?
Broke the rim.
I love it, man. I know DA, actually. So this is beautiful. Got his jersey on and everything. That's what I'm talking. That's how it all starts. In 20 years, we'll be talking about the next LeBron Anderson.
What do you think, Nick?
I don't know. I'm looking at the physics. Oh, he got the big ball through. I wasn't sure he was going to get the big ball through. This is impressive.
We have run out of time. We will see you tomorrow. First Take starts now.